All right, so thank you for tuning in and listening to the Sex and Horror Podcast with authors Dicey Grinner and Chantel Renee. Tonight we have Elias Hinojosa on with us.
Hello, hello. I'm so happy to be here and join you too. I met you guys at Houston Horror Film Fest and it was a blast, to say the least.
It was. Each year just gets better and better, and this year was just top tier.
Boom. It was so fun.
Yeah. Oh, I was like a kid.
We need to tell everybody who Elias is and what we what he did at the Houston Horror Film Fest.
Absolutely. I'm gonna read out his IMDb bio because I don't want to miss any of this. All right. First off, I'm gonna let you know right now, if you're listening to the audio and you're not watching, you need to stop what you're doing and go watch the video version of this because you have got to see Elias. He's got the dimples that are so deep. I mean, the hair is all nice and thick and he's got style. Ooh, okay.
Well, I had to dress up for you gals.
I had to.
Look, Chantel, when he came over and I was talking to him about and everything, I was like, oh, I mean, I kept getting like sidetracked. Like every time he turned and I just saw the dimples popping, I'm like, what is going on? You gonna mess around and be a character in one of my stories.
Mm-hmm. And trust me, you want to be a character in one of her stories, not mine.
I love it. Kill me.
All right. So Elias Hinojosa is an actor, writer, and director based in Los Angeles, California. Born along the border of Mexico in the Rio Grande Valley, he graduated from the University of Texas at Austin, where he studied film from Professor Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
You catch that? Yeah, I was waiting for Chantel to catch that. Yes, Professor Matthew McConaughey. Who also has the dimple thing going on, right?
It's true, yeah.
Okay. His directorial debut, Lullaby, which debuted in 2018. We have had a chance to watch it. I can't wait to talk about it. It's 6 minutes long, and it packed a punch. Okay. Lullaby was showcased at South by Southwest and won numerous accolades across the festival circuit. An experienced actor and personality, because we had a chance to see you act in the film for the Houston Horror Film Festival. What was the name of that one?
All-Nighter.
All-Nighter.
That's right.
I watched it again. I watched both of your films, by the way, with my kids, but okay.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. An experienced actor and personality, he has hosted shows, podcasts, and pageants for the Miss Universe organization since his teenage years. He is represented by Minx Talent Management and DDO Artist Agency. It is an honor to have you on.
It is such an honor to be here. Oh my gosh, and talk to you two. You two are so much fun. I had the joy of being in your audience when you had that live podcast episode right from Houston Horror, and that was just so much fun. I actually went back. I was listening to it in my car on my way home from work because I wanted to catch myself up on what I missed, you know, because I came in.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm like, all right, I got to catch up because what if they bring up something that I wasn't there for? Snowballed, but yeah, I'm so happy to be here, and thanks for having me.
Yeah,
yes, yes. So you won the short film in the film screening. Oh yes, let's see it. Is that a skull down there? There are two skulls.
Yes. I won Best Actor in a Short Film.
Best Actor in a Short Film.
So cool.
Beautiful.
Nice.
I mean, look at that. That is gorgeous.
Yes.
That's fabulous.
Yeah. So she's going on the shelf for sure.
How many do you have now?
Trophies?
Yeah.
That's tough because I also have plaques.
Oh,
okay.
Awful brag, but I mean, yeah, it's been nice to have a few awards and to be in festivals, you know? I mean, it's funny because I made a joke about this the other day. It's like, yeah, if I were a kid again and someone were to ask me what I want to be when I grow up, I would say, I want to be a festival darling. You know, like, that's not, it's like, oh yeah, well, how much does that pay? I'm like, I wish I know. Yeah. But
yeah,
it's a lot of fun. And, but the biggest thing is sharing my work, sharing my stories, you know, my biggest obsession as a kid growing up, to bring it back to horror and sexuality. I mean, the Grimm's fairy tales originally were much darker than what Disney and fairy tale books kind of portrayed them out to be. They were cautionary tales, you know, they were warnings, you know, about growing up. And that was, I was obsessed with Grimm's fairy tales growing up, and also Wizard of Oz and Margaret Hamilton's Wicked Witch. Like, those were my obsessions. So everything I have become and am becoming kind of stems from a lot of my early childhood experiences. And I utilize the art form as a way to figure out life, figure out myself. Mm-hmm. As I'm sure you guys do with books and your stories and what you write.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And did you win the other awards for acting also? Was that for directing or producing or writing?
Oh, yeah. I've won for best writer for the one I made right before All Nighter, Widow, starring my grandmother. That's like a hybrid docu-narrative. You guys haven't seen that one. That one's kind of like Requiem for a Dream meets Seventh Seal. Mm-hmm. Golden Girls. You know what I mean? Like, it's got that camp element, and it stars my real grandmother. It's kind of an experiment in mental health and using film as a creative tool to heal from grief. Anyway, so I got best writer from there. I've gotten best director from Lullaby, a student film festival. I got best director. I got most eclectic short award for Lullaby. I've gotten finalist awards at, you know, various places. So it's been nice. It's been nice.
Yeah.
Dang, that's great.
I'm glad you sent Lullaby, because that was so appropriate for our podcast too. You know, it doesn't have, actually, I felt like it did have a horror element. And I'll tell you why, based on my interpretation. But the fetish part is stuff that we talk about a lot on here. So as soon as like I said, I was watching it with my kids, and as soon as I saw the Dominatrix outfit, I was like, oh, hold up! I pulled my phone back. I was like, I have not watched this all the way through yet. I don't know where this is going. But I mean, it was pretty tame, so I showed it to him. But
it could be much worse.
Yeah. Now it's 6 minutes and it packed a punch to me. Okay, can you tell us what it's about? And then I'll tell you, and then you can tell me if my interpretation of it was accurate.
Sure. I mean, you know, I don't like to define my stories too much, but ultimately, the story is about sacrifice and about motherhood.
Okay. Then that's exactly what I got from it. I saw a mother who wanted to be a singer. That was her passion. That's what she really wanted to do. But she was making a sacrifice being a mother. So she had this gig on the side so that she could take care of this child. And she was working her passion into it, you know, so that she could still, you know, kind of do what she enjoyed doing, which was singing. But she also had to make sure that she was still taking care of this child, so she couldn't do it to the audiences that she envisioned and imagined that she could. She had to kind of do it in a more awkward way. But I got the sacrifice part, and my son was like, do you feel like you sacrificed for us? Or how did he put it? Do you think you would be able to, you could still write books with us, right? Or something like that. And I was like, yes, of course, but it's probably a little easier without having the responsibility of children.
Right.
Oh, sure, yeah. It's funny that we're talking about that because I had this discussion earlier today with my own mother. And, you know, the idea that parenthood is a sacrifice, but at the same time, it should be one that you're willingly making because you're brought that life into the world. You know what I mean?
Of course.
So I felt that that was nice to see in your film that this was something she wanted, you know, but it was still, you know, if she didn't, she certainly wouldn't have put up with what she was putting up with to make that life, you know, for them at all. So I really enjoyed that part about it.
Yeah, I'm happy you guys responded well to it. You know, ultimately, it's twisted and a little sick, too, that it is an ode to my own mother. You know, I mean, she thankfully, you know, as far as I know, she hadn't had to put herself through any sex work or anything like that. But she had to sacrifice a great deal because she was a single mom. Taking care of me, and I started to enter school and film school and try to think about the type of stories I wanted to tell and the type of people that I admire. And it just came back to just the same person over and over and over again, my mother. And I started to miss her and beat myself up over the fleeting moments where I wouldn't show her my entire love, or I took her for granted, you know, or if I wasted her time, or, you know, then all these moments would pop up, and I view everything through a genre lens, right? And I had this incredibly talented friend named Zoe Wright, the star of Lullaby, and I'm like, you need to be like a star, right? And she's this beautiful voice. And so the mindset where I was and me wanting to make this sort of vehicle for Zoe combined into Lullaby. And it snowballed, you know, it became this kind of cruel cycle where she's caught between worlds in her own worlds. You know, like there's sort of this David Lynch-esque element to what I do because I'm so attracted to psychological stories, you know, and motherhood is very much a psychological story that I got to be a part of as a son, you know. And someone asked me in a Q&A, you're not female, you're not a mother, what makes you qualified to tell this story, a story like this? And I'm like, I completely understand the question, but I grew up every second of my life, you know, with the point of the story, you know, with the inspiration to the story. I've been on the receiving end of motherhood, and I've seen how it can be challenged by divorce, by a recession, you know, by a teacher's salary, you know, like there's all these instances throughout society that I would pick up on as a kid that I kind of bookmarked. And now as I'm an adult and I'm exploring things in a creative way, I'm able to sort of unfold those bookmarks and be like, kind of go back to, and kind of patch up any holes. Cause you know, I had a little bit of a tumultuous childhood, and imagination stories were my escape. And so was Dom, my character in Lullaby. Her name's Dom. You know, singing was her escape. So film can be an escape. It's all an escape. I just love escaping.
Absolutely. Thank you for going into that. I mean, that was pretty deep. And as a mother, I can relate to a lot of things you just said. I'm not saying that anyone who's not a mom can't relate, like you said, because you could be a child relating from that perspective. But right, I mean, I've firsthand experienced some of that, and you captured that in the movie. You captured that in the film. So All-Nighter, how did that come to be? All-Nighter, how did the movie come to be? And then, well, answer that first before I get to the next part.
Yeah, All-Nighter was my thesis film in film school. So it was like my third and final film, and I wanted to go out with a bang. You know, like and I wanted to wear all the hats that I had practiced wearing. I wanted to use all the tools that I had spent 4 years, more than that, sharpening, you know, throughout childhood and storytelling. Because at first I wanted to be the next Grimm brother, you know, like I wanted to write and illustrate my own twisted fairy tales. And in a way, I still am. I'm kind of doing that. And I came up with this idea, living in the dorms at my freshman year of college, and pulling all-nighters at the library. And I kind of had this vision of, you know, the maze and The Shining. What if that was the library? You know, like what if I doze off and I wake up and I can't escape. I can't leave the library. What if people are chasing me for a reason that I can't explain? You know, sometimes, and to this day, it feels like I'm constantly being chased by something, that I'm running out of time, you know, like the clock is chasing me, like the sand is running out of the hourglass. It's just always just my inner metronome is always kind of a couple beats, a couple ticks faster. And that leads to anxiety and paranoia, you know, and spiraling sometimes. And the medium of storytelling, movie making, I mean, that's kind of how I'm able to, you know, that's my Xanax sometimes. And that certainly was with this film. All Nighter was my reckoning, my coming of age story. I was in college and I spent 4 years sort of marinating it, developing it, and workshopping it ultimately at the end. And people weren't getting it. But in my head, I'm like, no, I just need, you don't have to get it. You know, like, I don't know. It just ultimately was something that I had to get off my chest. It was an identity crisis. And I knew that people could relate to that. And I wanted the movie to feel like a roller coaster. Like an emotional kind of roller coaster that sweeps you up and it still kind of keeps going, you know? And I wanted it to pack a punch in a little bit of time.
Yeah, it really did too.
Yeah. When Jay Mazur and I have went over there to go see the film, mm-hmm. After having met you at our booths, and there was a line outside. It was full on the inside, and they were only letting people in as someone came out. That's how much of a splash you made at the Houston Horror Film Festival.
I don't know if you can give me all the credit for that. It might have been the time of day, and I got really lucky, but it was a really great screening. People really responded well to it. And, you know, ultimately, at the end of the day, it is a mental health story. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I pitch it as mental health, not mental hell, because that's what it felt sometimes in college, grappling with who am I, where am I headed, where am I supposed to head, you know, like there's all these societal expectations, all this conformity that I felt I needed to fit into, you know, like I'm at the cusp of adulthood, this strange gray area between adolescence and adulthood, and I'm grappling with my sexuality, with my future, with my academia, with graduation, you know, with my career, with money. And so, you know, sometimes I still want to flip a switch, or it feels like I
might.
And that kind of, this movie kind of speaks to that inner potential, you know, everyone's inner monster. Like, can people just snap one day?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I tell you what, as someone that's probably about twice your age, you're going to still, it's always a maze. It's always a question, like, am I on the right path? Am I doing what I should be doing? Should I have done that? You know, I don't think we ever really figure it out.
Uh-huh. That's true.
But when I was watching the movie, it took me back to law school days. I went to grad school before law school, so I've spent quite a bit of years in school, but it took me back to those all-nighters. I'm chugging Red Bulls and 5-hour energy drinks, all the stuff that is probably the reason why I'm on blood pressure medicine now. But all the coffee, you know, Chantel has seen a little taste of that when we've been writing a little bit together over the last few weeks. And I'm going, like I am literally going, and I'm chugging back the coffee because I know that I got to get this assignment done, and then I got to switch and do something else because, you know, I'm constantly doing different types of work. And I'm drinking the uppers so that I can stay awake and do all that. And that's what it reminded me of. And there is some insanity in that, you know, there is from a lot of different ways. Like, first, why are you driving yourself that damn hard? There's something's not quite right up there for that reason. And then others is that time period where you're really, really exhausted, but you're still going. And then there's I don't want to say hallucinations, but there's all kinds of things that really happen then. And when I am writing a story, I love that period of time though, because that's when I am really like channeling whatever I need to channel. So there might be something there too. So yeah, I connected with that all-nighter.
Mm-hmm. I like the chaos you brought out, the chaos of the choices, you know, the chaos of life really. And especially you captured the youth of it. Because when, you know, speaking as a person who's definitely twice your age, I would say now I look back and I was like, you know, I wanted to do, because I still am that way to some degree, but I wanted to do so much. And then I found that I did nothing. You know what I mean? And then I found, okay, no, I've got to do this. And then it was like, oh, then this chaos happened because I did it. So you really captured that so well in the writing, and you won for best acting, which was fantastic. Yes, you did a great job in that. But man, I mean, such a great concept as a writer, as a creator, you did a great job in that, you know, world and drawing us into that.
Thank you. Hey, well, coming from a writer, I mean, that is a huge compliment because writing is tough, so hard. So that script that you saw was I had an initial first draft that was a bit different from what ended up on screen. But through the workshopping process of the thesis class, my cohorts were frustrated with the script. You know, because the script, I don't want to say it lacks anything, but it certainly doesn't have the traditional structure of your everyday film, even horror film, right? It's more of a psychological mind trip. You know what I mean? Like mind fucks. It's part of my language, but it's not structured. And so I kind of had to push back and rewrite and sort of kind of fit their mold, but not, you know what I mean? Like throw them a little lure. Because I knew ultimately what I wanted to do was have a fever dream, you know. Dicey, you brought up, it's kind of like the hallucination phase. That's called delirium. That's the element that us like nocturnals kind of feed on. It's like a high, right? Yeah. And I'm very much the same way. I love to stay up late and it's like, okay, I'm the only one awake in the world. You know what I mean? I've got this perspective that no one else has. I know the secrets, you know, of the night. And that stuff just gets me going, you know? I mean, it always has. And that's probably another area in which All Nighter came out of too. Yeah.
And I think I've read this somewhere and I can't remember what the hours are, but they call them the witching hours, right? Do you feel particularly inspired around those particular hours at night more than any other part of the day? And I don't know why, if it's because like I'm done going back and forth between 3 or 4 apps on social media. I'm not watching anything on TV. I'm not, you know, all these things are kind of shut off and it's just me in the darkness. My kids are in the bed, husband's asleep. And if I'm writing or doing anything, it's like an open portal. Mm-hmm. So, So y'all can relate to that then.
Like a rabbit hole.
Well, I'll be in doing the same thing as you guys, and then all of a sudden I'll hear a song and I literally have to get up and start writing the fucking song. And I'm like, son of a bitch.
Music.
Mm-hmm. Huh?
Yeah, I was saying Chantel also writes music.
Yeah. Oh, y'all want to see my children? Besides my actual children, my doggies.
Oh, wow. Oof. Look at those bad boys.
So, yeah, they call to me as I try to go to bed.
You know, I knew it. I knew you were a rock star. When I said it. Really are. You really are a rock star.
Well, I don't know. We'll see.
Elias, do you have any, I was about to ask like three or four things at once. Do you have any fur babies? Do you play any instruments or music? Oh, it was all coming out at once.
I love it. Rapid fire. I do have a fur baby. He's a little kitty. He's a tuxedo cat. His name is Prince. Prince Gemini Moon Moor Park. We live on Moor Park Street, and he's a Gemini Moon. I'm a Gemini. And Prince, because, well, I'm the king and he's the prince. and he's a sweetie. And I do play instruments. I'm able to play the trombone. And sometimes I've been known to still play the instrument every once in a while. but, you know, it was like middle school band. And what was that other question?
I didn't get to the third one yet.
Okay.
That was all I had at that time.
I do have to say I have a prince too. Prince, come here. Oh, stop. I sure do. He just came over.
And he's like,
hold on, I'm gonna let you guys see him. There's my baby. Can y'all see him?
Oh my goodness.
Spartacus.
Is he a kitten kitty? Is he a kitty kitty?
He is. He's only 6 months, and y'all are seeing him while he's still intact, because day after tomorrow he's getting snipped.
Oh, I'm calling my fur baby right now.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do.
That's too funny though. Yeah, I just started calling. Come here. When I first got him, I thought he was a girl, so he was Princessa.
That happens with cats, though. I thought the same thing when I was growing up with a stray cat that we tried to keep. Oh my gosh. Oh, my God. My kitty, I don't even know where my kitty is. He's, like, living the life without me right now.
I put him up so he wouldn't be interfering, and then I was like, why not?
He's a good boy. I can tell.
He is a good boy.
Aww.
Well, just so that, you know, we could break it up a little bit and get more into who you are, you know, instead of just movies, you know, and films, even though I know that's a large part of who you are.
Right, right.
You said that you had been, this was a question that I asked you when I met you.
Okay.
That you've been doing films, and you said ever since you were a child. So you always knew that you wanted to do films. And did you know, like, it's not often that I meet people that are doing exactly what it is they wanted to do when they were little, because, you know, it was a dream, and then other people started dissuading you from it. Oh, you should go do this, or you should go do that, and you're actually doing exactly what you wanted to do as a child. Did you have support around you every step of the way? You know, like, what do you attribute to actually following your path and sticking to it?
My stubbornness. How stubborn, you know, I was as a kid, and in some ways I still am. You know, as in my early adulthood, I'm trying to kind of, you know, get over some of my insecurities, you know, some of my stubbornness that I've attributed over, you know, my adolescence and college and whatnot. But I did have a really good support system, you know, creative support system as well. Aside from being stubborn, you know, my mother, of course, made sure that I was whipped into good shape, you know, that I had good manners and that I would always have good relationships with the people around me, regardless of whether I, you know, liked them or not. You know, it's always good to be a good person. What goes around comes around. But then also my high school director in theater. In Texas, we had something called One Act Play. They still do. UIL One Act Play competition. Mm-hmm. So different high schools. Oh, yeah. You guys might have heard of it. Oh, yeah, they do it?
They do other UILs, but I'm trying to get them in that.
Yes, One Act Play is so much fun. I did it since middle school when it, you know, the youngest you could do it. And it was very competitive. Texas is very competitive. It's a football state, right?
Yeah.
Theater, One Act Play is the same sort of competitive edge, cutthroat. And yeah. I was the king of cutting throats. Yeah. Like, let me tell you, like, I was very competitive, and I still am a little bit of a competitive person, but I was captain of the debate team junior year and senior year, and I did all sorts of debate. But we went to state finals in One Act Play my freshman year and my sophomore year, and we would do these really cool plays, boundary pushing, envelope pushing, mature content, and then we would do... We would go over state, win all these awards. I would win Best Actor. We would win All-Star Cast and all these awards and go to state finals, be recognized at the state level. And then we would bring it back home for public performances and we wouldn't sell out. No one would go see our shows. You know, meanwhile, the football team couldn't make it out of district and would have a full stadium. It wouldn't make any sense. So what I did, I tried to figure out, okay, what can I do to put butts in those seats? So I started making movie trailers for our plays. And my theater director really encouraged it and recognized that I had a knack for directing and kind of let me, he even gave me my own title. I was like marketing director, you know, and I would manufacture, I'd package all these really cool little trailers to promote the show. We would show it on the morning announcements because guess who would do the morning announcements every morning? Me. So that's, and then sure enough, we started selling out. You know, this was early days of YouTube. So we would spread it all over YouTube, all over early Instagram and, you know, try to get the message out. That's how I figured out that I could do this. I could make movies, you know? I mean, and so that's what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Trying to. That's how it started. I don't know.
Yeah.
That question.
Elias, you are something else. You're so inspiring.
Thank you.
And do you, okay, so these, I've seen two of your short films. Is that the goal? You want to continue to do shorts or do you want to do more feature length?
Well, I mean, in this sort of environment right now, mm-hmm. can't afford to be too picky, right? So as long as I'm telling stories, I don't care the format. Mm-hmm. You know, I would make killer music videos and still tell a killer story in those music videos, like Gaga. I look at Gaga and her ability to make these mini short films in her music videos. I mean, that she was an early inspiration of mine, her videos, you know, and what she was able to do with the medium. Commercials, brand films. I mean, there's a lot of different avenues I could take as a director, but ultimately, feature length would be the funnest. Or being a showrunner, my own series or mini series with myself and a collaborator or something, and showrunning, making these creative decisions. That's why I'm living in LA. I mean, I want to be able to sort of figure these things out, build these building blocks. And that's what All Nighter is. That's what Lullaby is. You know, they're building blocks. It's foundational materials so I can ultimately have some sort of creative storytelling empire
right.
to leave when I die.
J-Lo of the... filmmaking.
J-Lo. Oh, I can get behind J-Lo for sure. Oh, yeah. Eli from the block.
So look at This is what I need to know. Dicey's being so kind and nice, but I'm gonna bring this out. I want to know how many Eyes Wide Open parties have you gone to in LA?
Crack the whip. What was that?
How many Eyes Wide Open or Eyes Wide Shut, whatever it was called, parties have you gone to in LA?
I wanted to ease him into it, you know.
Ooh, take me by surprise, honey. I like it rough. No, I'm kidding. I've been to a few. Not gonna lie. I am pretty vanilla. People are surprised how vanilla I am, but I'm not like bland vanilla. I'm like that good Madagascar vanilla. You know what I mean?
When I was your age, I was going to things, and I mean, there's stuff that I'll never unsee.
Right. I mean, I've been to Folsom Street Fair. I've been to underground, circuit parties in New York City, Hell's Kitchen. I've been to leather dungeons. You know what I mean? I don't partake in all the specific activities, but I really enjoy the culture of it, the environment, the atmosphere. I mean, it inspires me. I mean, the dark imagery, I mean, it reminds me of genre, it reminds me of noir, it reminds me of old erotica, it reminds me of Madonna's Justify My Love music video, you know, it reminds me, the smell of leather reminds me of Texas and cowboy boots and rugged musk, you know, like there's just so much to enjoy. So when I say I'm vanilla, you know, it's very, very cultured vanilla. Hey, and of course, you could put toppings on my vanilla. Well, not like that, but you know.
You have me analyzing myself now.
Ooh, giving you an equation, a formula.
Because you could be in the environment but not partake, but you can still enjoy being there. So that's considered vanilla. Then I guess I'm vanilla.
You know what? Well, okay. I would say vanilla compared to a lot of the things I've seen and witnessed. Mm. You know, not saying I don't partake. I mean, I do have fun, but my version of fun, you know, the classics get me every time. You know, I mean, I'm not, I don't branch out too much, but I enjoy to, you know, I like going to the Tom of Finland Foundation in their house. They have a house dedicated to queer erotic art in Echo Lake, California, Echo Park, California. And, you know, I'm inspired by subcultures and counterculture, you know? I mean, those sorts of movements, that sort of attitude, it invigorates, it stimulates my creativity.
Yeah, and you know what? Do you think sexual energy in general does that?
Absolutely. I mean, I was thinking about this topic fairly recently and how the attitude or the culture of sexuality, that everyone can relate to it, you know? And then my mind said, wait a minute, no. What about asexuals? Asexuals are valid. They exist, right? They don't, you know, but it's not to say that their relationship in contrast to or in juxtaposition with is not interesting or is not fascinating. You know, there's a lot to be explored with the energy that one's sexuality kind of exudes. You know, some people are scared of it.
Asexuals do have, because I dated an asexual not knowing it, which was really difficult. But asexuals do have a sexual energy. It's just, it's more along the lines of companionship. It's more along the lines of creating a bond that has to do with acceptance and a loving, more generous, you know, exchange of energy. Whereas, you know, a sexual relationship is sometimes a really a one-sided relationship. One side's taking so much, right, and the other side might be giving a lot. So, you know, in asexual energy, I feel like there's a lot of balance there. It's just a different type of energy. It's not, you know,
gotcha.
If that
gotcha.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it certainly does. Thank you for that clarification, because I've never, you know, I've never been intimate or, you know, with an asexual person. So, but I
have, and it's a lot like having a best friend in school. You know what I mean? Gotcha. But there is some sexualness to it. It's just not actual intercourse.
Gotcha. Okay. Gotcha. There's so many mysteries out there. I love to solve all these puzzles. But I mean, to go back to your question, Dicey, sexual energies, they can scare people. You know, I mean, we go back, we connect it to horror and to cinema. Basic Instinct, the erotic thriller genre. Where did it go? I need it to come back.
Oh my God. I'm saying this all the time. Yes. Why are people so afraid to go there?
There has been this newfound puritanism in mainstream media that is sort of preventing that freedom that once was, right? And I mean, I enjoy that sort of stuff, the shameless, yeah. Release the inhibitions, like just emote using film as and genre and movie language as your paintbrush. Just emote. It's okay. Let it out. It's okay. We won't judge you for simply exercising this art form. You know, there's so much there. There's so much left.
Or there might be some that judge, but we don't care about that. You know, they have something else they can watch.
Of course.
Like, where are the films like Unfaithful?
Which one's the one with Kathleen Turner? Remember that one?
I'm like, I don't know. I don't know people's Kathleen names.
I will Google it. I mean.
Which one is that one? Or even Dressed to Kill, you know, that was sort of an erotic thriller. But regardless, it was still toying around with this idea of cross dressing and gender, and I mean, so did Psycho. It didn't intend to, you know, but Psycho is there's a lot to explore there. Whenever you start diving into it from a psychological standpoint. You know, I mean, that's not meant for me to say, oh yeah, everyone take a magnifying glass and put a doctor's hat on, pretend that you're a doctor and try to diagnose this film. No, but the mind is limitless. We only use a fraction of what our brains can do. The potential of the mind is like a rabbit hole, you know, and that excites me as a filmmaker, as a creative. It's exciting. It's scary.
Yeah, Lie With Me was another one that I really enjoyed. It wasn't an erotic, it was not an erotic thriller, but it was an erotic film that just, you know, was just about a couple of the dynamics that happened between them. But I enjoy that because it appeals to my voyeuristic nature. Like, watching everything happen to them without having to experience the consequences of it.
Yeah, that reminds me of Possession. Have you seen Possession?
Yes.
So good. Rosemary's Baby. Not necessarily erotic thriller, but definitely some erotic horror in there. And oh, loved that. What's another one I was just thinking about? It was on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, I thought of a few while I was sitting here, but
It Follows is a recent
kind yes. of Follows. Yeah, we've talked about that one on here before too.
I call that one the story of STDs.
Yeah.
But yeah. Look at, you know, here's the thing. I always tend to try to see things from a different perspective as a writer, and I say all experiences are good experiences. Mm-hmm. I also say, even though the society seems like they're trying to oppress or suppress the sexuality and things, it's a perfect backdrop to bring them back out. It lends you that decadence. It lends you that mystery because, you know, the curtains are trying to be pulled down and don't look. I mean, in Texas right now, it is going insane. The school districts are losing their fucking mind. And they are literally trying to be like, I don't want my children hearing about sexuality. And it's like, What?
But please, let's have guns in schools.
but are they going home and seeing a mother and father and going, oh, I don't know how y'all created me. You know what I mean? Like, that's just the stupidest shit. So it's a perfect backdrop. It's a perfect backdrop, this Puritan movement, to bring out, and it will highlight, it will show those things even sharper when you bring them out in your creations.
Yeah, and educate. It'll educate in a way people didn't expect.
Yes. I have noticed that there have been some that have been coming, but we probably get maybe one a year, like 365 Days, that series, Sex Life, the series, Fatal Seduction. There have been a few that I just thought of that have come out over the last few years. Mm-hmm. They usually have such a large following that I think you would think that the execs would be like, you know what? People want more of this. We need to have more of these. I'm surprised that they're not shooting them out faster.
Right.
How many people are streaming them, you know?
Yeah.
Obviously, we want to see these bored housewives, these sexually repressed housewives and middle-aged women want to have this outlet, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, to my business. So, Elias, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was saying we're talking to the perfect person to bring this problem to.
Yep. You're absolutely right. And I'm on it. You have no fear. I'm already on it. I've been doing my homework.
Yes. You know, okay, what about budgeting for films? So how are you funding your films, if you don't mind my asking? Mm-hmm. And like, what is the process from getting it from your head? I know you write a script and get your people and all that, but you know, the funding process and getting it filmed and distributed, all that.
Well, I don't really have much experience yet with distribution. I hope that will change pretty soon. You know, I still have shorts, and distribution for shorts is a bit different. I'm learning, and a lot fewer opportunities. But we'll see. Hopefully, All Nighter or Widow or even Lullaby can find a home, you know, a distributor or a streamer or some sort of platform. But in terms of fundraising, Lullaby, my debut, that was completely self-funded. I had a few family members and like my mom, she got the hotel room. You know what I mean? And so I put her as associate producer. You know what I mean? Like, it was very much grassroots and just run and gun guerrilla filmmaking almost, right? I mean, storyboarded a little bit, yes. Widow was completely self-funded as well. I used all my own resources. We filmed in my grandmother's home on the border of Mexico. We used, you know, my cinematographer's own camera. We didn't rent any camera. We used the school's equipment. Everything came out of pocket in terms of the U-Haul, paying people for gas. No one got paid. It's all low budget students work, you know, student labor. That's pretty much what those films were. And the majority of my crew in All Nighter was as well, because it was a thesis film, but All Nighter was a bit different. All Nighter, through my class with Matthew McConaughey, I was able to secure funding through Longhorn Creators Foundation. So it was ultimately like a grant. So mm-hmm. I storyboarded the hell out of All Nighter, and I even made a concept trailer. You know, my background in making trailers for the plays, I made a concept trailer, you know, starring myself, because I knew I was going to be in it, and a few of my friends that I knew I wanted to be in the movie or in the world that would fit well. We made this 30-second really badass trailer to Depeche Mode's Personal Jesus, and running through the library, you know, super cool. And we ended up winning the grant. So that funded a majority of All Nighter. And then we also had an Indiegogo campaign. And I had a producer too. So it was a bigger production. So the producer and I and the cast, we were pulsing out that Indiegogo and fundraising to meet the remaining financial goals. We had to rent locations, get costumes, you know, pay a sound recordist. That's up there, because if your movie sounds like shit, it is shit, you know. So you got to make sure that your audio is crystal clear, and you get someone checking those levels, making sure everything's right. Also, script supervisor, I found, is really, really good if you, especially for me. I mean, I was acting in front of the camera for most of that. You know, I couldn't be back there behind the camera making sure that, okay, this take, this happened. Make sure to make a note here, you know. So a script supervisor is someone who is looking at the takes that are being done in real time and looking at the script and calculating, okay, on this take, on take 2F, he sneezed, false take. So I know as the editor, because I also edited All Nighter, I know as the editor, I'm like, okay, I don't even have to look at that clip because it's a false take. You know, it saves time, saves energy, saves money. So all these little hacks that I found making All Nighter, if I were to give advice to any first-time filmmaker, whether they're applying for a grant or not, identify resources.
Yeah.
Look what's around you. Just take a minute, take a breath, close your eyes, open them, see what's already in front of you.
Yeah.
Utilize that. You know, I did that. I saw my grandma. All right. Mm-hmm. All right. All right. Let's make a movie. You know, I saw my friend Zoe. Lullaby happened. You know, I saw the mirror. I saw myself. Mm-hmm. All Nighter happened. It was a self dissection, you know? And so that's what I try to do. I try to point a camera at something that perplexes me, something that fascinates me, something that scares me, something that excites me, arouses me, seduces me. I mean, I live for all. I love these verbs.
More yeah, verbs. You did the thing with your eyes again. That smolder. Okay, I'm listening.
But anyway, I forgot what your question was about.
Okay. So, do you do films full time, or do you have another job?
Well, the dream is to do films full time. I mean, I live in LA. LA is very expensive. I don't come from money. You know what I mean? I'm not a Nepo baby. I don't know anyone in the industry. I'm as independent as they come, right? I'm as indie as they come. So I do have a full-time job. I have a couple jobs, you know, got to make the hustle of a hobby over here in Hollywood. But I'm a VIP tour guide at Universal Studios Hollywood. So I do that. I'm in the back lot on the movie studio every day, surrounded by over 100 years of cinema history, you know, and so it's a fun day job. You know, I get to immerse myself in where I ultimately want to end up, you know. I also work with a lot of brands. I'm a brand rep and a brand ambassador and a brand demonstrator for really cool brands in LA. I get to go to Erewhon specialty markets and collect feedback from consumers and attend investor parties and talk about different brands. I work for a few beverages and like Nutella's main competitor.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you're getting your hustle on. What is your next project? What's your next project, Elias? Let's say I wanted to invest in your next film. What is your next film?
Ooh, all right. Well, in September, I go to Camp John Waters every year. Are you guys familiar with John Waters at all?
Not me.
Mm-hmm. I am.
John Waters, he is the king, the pope of trash. That's essentially what they've given his title. He helped kind of revitalize, rejuvenate, invent, like, the camp movie, the camp cult film with Pink Flamingos. Do you know Divine? Divine, the drag queen with the big eyebrows.
We met them at Texas Frightmare, Chantel. Was that right?
No.
Divine's no longer with us.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry then. No.
That's okay.
Might have been an impersonator. But no one can replicate the magic that is Divine. And John Waters was responsible for Divine. Divine was like John's Zoe for me in Lullaby. You know what I mean? Like, Divine was in all of his movies, Pink Flamingos, Hairspray, the original Hairspray, Serial Mom, Crybaby. John Waters, the director, he's like 80 years old now, and he's a big inspiration to me. So I go every year to his camp, his adult summer camp for his biggest fans, his groupies. They have a little film festival there. And I met this really cool director. We're now really good friends and collaborators. Her name's Jessica Sanders. She's Oscar nominated. And both of her parents are Oscar nominated documentarians. So she kind of, you know, she kind of grew up in this storytelling world. And so she gets it, you know, and I met her, and we both get genre. We both get John Waters. And we're like, you know what, let's make something.
That's so awesome.
We have this guerrilla, this independent sort of project, and it's ever evolving. It's non-scripted, it's unscripted, and it's all improv, and I'm in it, and some of our friends from camp are in it, and we're trying to expand it, trying to figure out, okay, let's build from here, you know, and it's all really organic and a really grassroots way of building story. It's an experiment, you know, it's fun. So that's what we're doing. It's called American Filth, and it's inspired by the world.
Yeah,
it's inspired by the world of John Waters, and it's satire.
My favorite John Waters is Pecker.
Oh, I love Pecker. Yes, with Edward Furlong. Yeah, it's a good.
Yes, filled with grace.
Full of grace. It's such a good one.
Yes.
So, and I'm also, I'm working with a comedienne. Her name is Natalie Perlin. And I'm making these really cool, like, erotic comedy films with her. Her type of comedy is very, very bold. She is, let's just say, very well endowed in the chest area.
We know somebody like that on the show.
I'm all covered up. See, I'm on my best behavior.
Yes, ma'am. And she used to be a burlesque dancer, and she, you know, there's a lot. Her comedy is pretty ballsy, you know, not to be honest. And she's going to camp for the first time this year, but we met at the Madonna Inn, which if you Google the Madonna Inn in California, it is like a historical landmark, super 40s, super kitsch. And we instantly hit it off. So we're making these boudoir style films.
How fun.
So yeah, I mean, they would play really well in certain types of film festivals or you know, fringe festivals. But that's what I'm interested in. I'm interested in the fringes of society, counterculture, subculture. I mean, all of that. Just, I'm really fascinated with the juxtaposition between that.
You said you have family in a border between Texas and Mexico. Are you from America or from Mexico?
Well, I'm like fourth or fifth generation American. So my family's Tejano, you know, like.
Yes.
Same. Puro pinche Tejano. Really? You're Tejana?
Yeah, but zero Spanish. No one taught me Spanish. So I'm like the coconut, you know?
Same. Okay, same. We're exactly the same. Because my mom and her family, I mean, growing up, they would get slapped on the wrist for speaking Spanish in class.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that was looked down on in mm-hmm. Texas, especially South Texas. Well, everywhere in Texas, but it so I, you know, yo entiendo mucho, pero yo hablo bien poquito. Working on it.
A lot more than me, baby. She knows Spanish.
Oh, perfect.
Duolingo. I've been doing Duolingo I'm on a 750-day streak.
Oh my goodness. I need to do that. I need to get better.
No, it's so sad.
I went to Cartagena in January, and I was able to communicate, you know.
In Colombia.
I got around for a whole week, you know, based on the Spanish that I had learned from Duolingo.
That's incredible. I've been to Colombia.
Okay.
Not to Cartagena, not to the coastal, the regions. You went to where Shakira is from. You had fun. Right? She's from Barranquilla.
I don't know where she's from, but I did have fun in Cartagena.
Oh, okay. Nice. I was in the interior regions, in the jungles.
Medellin?
No, I didn't get to go to Medellin. I was in the Cafetera region, so Finlandia, Manizales, Pereira.
Oh, that, you hear that accent coming through?
It happens.
Yeah.
Can't help it.
That crisp. Matter of fact, I can't even roll my R's. Can you imagine, like, trying to speak Spanish and can't roll your R's?
I can't either, but sometimes it happens. It's weird. I'll be like, whoa.
I was just possessed. You're just like, let's go in the car.
Yeah.
Oh.
I have tried for so long. It's an impediment.
I get it. This is why you don't make a good lesbian.
You know what? If we had a little more time, I would explain to you how I could prove you wrong. But my track record speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm. All right, then.
But there's about 10 out there that can vouch for me.
Okay, girl.
10. 10 times 10.
I just became like Mexican vanilla over here.
The best kind. Yum, yum. That's like horchata.
Chantel forgets that how old I am. I mean, I've been married. I've been with him for 18 years, but I spent my 20s single.
Oof.
That's the best time to be single. Anybody who's listening, enjoy your life at 20. Just be careful because it follows.
Oh my God.
Gotta bring it back. Gotta bring it back.
Clever. That was a nice slip and slide, that
was,
right?
That was good. Slip and slide. Love me a good slip and slide.
Okay. We're starting to go off the rails, and I'm loving it. But I know we have already taken up about an hour of your time, Elias. So I don't want to overdo it and then you won't come back.
I can go all night with you guys.
Listen, you better bring a new film next year because we want to see you at the event.
Yes, yes. I intend to get
some horror in there.
I got to whip something up right quick.
Yes.
Absolutely. I can't wait to see what you put out next. And I've learned so much from you based on how much you've packed into such a short. Because usually when I'm thinking short film, I'm thinking 30 minutes. But you went 6 minutes, 9 minutes, and told the whole story. So yeah, that is impressive. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate that, guys. Thanks for, you know, sitting back and watching it, you know? I mean, that's why I make it. I make it so people can watch it, you know? So I'm happy you were able to connect with it on one way or another, because ultimately that's why I do what I do, you know? I mean, I like to connect with people. People see my vision. What's up in here? That's the closest way to do it, you know, to kind of teleport what I'm thinking and feeling over to you. Sit here and watch 6 minutes of my soul bared open, you know? Like, we'll see each other on a different level after. So I'm happy that we were able to do that today, guys. And yes, I'd love to come back anytime, please.
And I know somebody in LA now.
Oh, yeah, you do.
I've never been there, but one day.
Oh, you got it. You got to come. You got to come and do like a Halloween Horror Nights at Universal.
Ooh.
It's fun and scary.
Nice. Do you see celebrities go through there for that sort of thing?
Oh, yeah, all the time. I work in VIP.
I can't let you go without knowing, is Matthew McConaughey as sexy like in real life as he is on film?
He is gorgeous inside and out, so passionate about the next generation of filmmakers. He would come to class in like a tank top and shorts and sandals. You know, super casual, but ready to like dive in, you know? And he has no leg hair.
Does he have native in him?
I don't know. That's just something, an extra tidbit. He's maybe he nares really well, but Maybe they were like really blonde, but I don't think he has any leg hair.
next time you're in Texas, we're gonna take a trip to Austin. That's all I got to say.
Please, I miss Austin.
I'm driving you there, and we're gonna find him.
Yes. I'm usually in Austin for every South by Southwest. So.
Oh, nice.
You guys should go during South by. You would love it. You should do a podcast episode of South by Southwest.
Yeah, we should.
I have.
We ain't got time, girl. We ain't got time.
I would love to. I'll leave it at that. All right. Thank you so much, Elias. And I hope that we'll see you around in social media. Can you tell everybody where they can find you?
Yeah, you guys can keep up with me best probably at my Instagram at the Elias Hinojosa, T-H-E. Elias, and then my last name's Hinojosa. My website's eliashinojosa.com, and my phone number is... No, I'm kidding. My social security is...
Right.
Oh, and so the H is silent, my bad. N-O.
Yeah, you're fine. You know, it's whatever. I don't care.
All right. Well, good night. Thank you.
Good night. Thank you so much. Have a marvelous night. I know it's late over there. Well. Oh, my goodness. All right. Sweet dreams.
All right. Bye.
Bye.